Yes, on KMOX. A few minutes past 2 p.m. Gloomy day out there. We're going to get you through it. No Cardinal baseball tonight, but the boys will be doing all the sports stuff starting at 5 p.m. The other night, we had our annual get-together of hospice volunteers for Bethesda, and I met a lot of new friends, and one of them was Katie McKay, and they were talking about her having this wind phone that she put up at JB, and so I introduced myself and invited her to be on the show, and she's here now. Can I tell them what you said earlier out in the hallway? I think that's hilarious.
Yes, sir.
So I went out to get Katie and said, hey, Ryan, come on back. I said, are you nervous? And she goes, I'm going to be honest with you, sir. I don't know who you are.
That's the best.
Yeah, it's great. And I'm like, well, fortunately for you, you don't, because you'd be so intimidated. So very nice to meet you again.
Nice to meet you as well, yes.
And let's start out before we talk about the wind phone.
Certainly.
But let's just, you know, kind of tell the audience the story you were kind of telling me, whatever you want to share.
Sure. So I became a hospice volunteer like Dave. I've been doing it for about 3.5 years. My like many of us hospice volunteers, I think we got to it sort of in an organic way because we had a loved one or someone that had a hospice experience. My mom was on hospice during COVID. So COVID struck, you know, December, January of 2020. And by March, they had shut down the nursing home. So I was no longer able to see her or visit her. I was at the nursing home all the time. I did her laundry. I spent a lot of time there. And so at that point, we could only talk to each other on the phone. Which was difficult because she had dementia, and I had a little burner flip phone for her. And some medical things happened to the point where I chose to put her on hospice, and she was only on hospice for 10 days. But because the nursing home was shut down and the hospice programs weren't really as active as they are, I was very alone, and I struggled because I didn't have anyone. You know, the hospice program is beautiful and it's robust and there's a lot of resources and things. But during that time, it was fresh COVID. Nobody knew what was going on. Everyone was terrified. But because of my rapport with the nursing home, they allowed me in. They broke the rules. They allowed me to come in and give me full access to her. I had to wear a hazmat suit. And like I said, it was only 10 days. So once that was over, it was like she never existed. We couldn't have a funeral. There's no obituary. I'm a lonely only. I'm an only child. Okay. And my dad died a decade and a day before her. So it was just myself, and my friends didn't know. You know, it was just hard. No one could relate to me, and I didn't have access to those hospice resources that most people are given.
Yeah.
And that's COVID's fault.
Yeah.
So as I struggled with my grief, I spent this time now looking for projects and things to assuage that grief. To calm it down, to tell it to chill out.
Mm-hmm.
And hospice was the first thing that I started.
Yeah. And how has it worked?
Well, it's difficult. And, you know, it's rewarding. It is triggering and can be kind of traumatic sometimes for me. I think just even going into a nursing home sometimes can be a little bit. And to be honest, I sometimes have to give myself a little bit of a pep talk to get in there. But once I'm in there, it's no big deal, and I feel great. And I have had multiple individuals that I have developed relationships with, and then I'm also a NOTA volunteer.
Yeah.
So right now I just have one patient, and she is fairly young. She doesn't have any family or close relatives or anything like that. So as I have progressed in the program, they've started to give me sort of less like non-standard patients.
Mm-hmm.
So I've sort of created a little niche for myself.
Okay, good.
In that. And so she, you know, she doesn't advocate for herself or anything like that. And so I just go, I like to lay eyes and hands on her, listen to her, you know, and just spend some time with her.
You know, I didn't need to be taught the lesson that life isn't fair, but going through that and sitting vigil with people who are passing away, and seeing just their different lives.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are like, oh, their kids will be here at 8 p.m. and they're crazy about their dad and they just needed to go to dinner. And others are like, they haven't had anyone visit them in 3 years.
Right.
right?
Yeah.
And the way you lost your mom, mm-hmm. better than it could have been. A lot of people in COVID who didn't even get to see their
Absolutely.
Parents.
I'm very lucky. I'm blessed.
But
I'm very
also
lucky.
Surreal.
Yeah.
The hazmat. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes.
let's make this more dramatic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
tough.
Yeah, very tough. And I, it was so difficult. It happened so quickly. I had no coping skills. I had no idea what each day was going to be like, especially because it was such a short amount of time, that I certainly didn't want anyone. I wanted to do what I could to make sure that no one else felt like I did. Mm-hmm. And that's impossible. But, you know, ultimately, it's to help me out.
Sure.
And however I can do that.
Yeah.
Is. And so, yeah. So like, it's, so the hospice has, that was my first big one.
Yeah.
Where I really.
If you guys are just tuning in, talking to Katie McKay, I met Katie the other night at a NOTA volunteer get together, where you get together and have iced tea and cookies and, you know, tell stories and things like that. And it really does help, because I'm one of those people who are pretty card straight up on the table. And I've said to my NOTA volunteers and the people who lead it, like, I'm not crazy about this. Mm-hmm. When I approach a room of someone who's passing away, mm-hmm. it feels like you're going up the stairs to the exorcist house. Like, you don't know what it's going to be. You don't know what state they're going to be. I'm a natural caregiver mm-hmm. and a natural loving person, but I'm not a natural, like, show me anything you want to show me. I can take anything. I'm pretty sensitive. Mm-hmm. But then, like you said, once you get in that room, mm-hmm. and I've had a couple people that weren't great,
sure.
But once you get in that room, you're like, human,
right.
we can do this.
Right.
We can get through this.
Right. I'm not a nurse.
Yeah.
You know, I can't handle that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, you develop, even with my lady that I have now, you know, we don't connect necessarily in a verbal
sure.
way or even eye contact or
yeah.
anything like
that.
It's
not always Tuesdays with Maury.
It certainly is not. It
yeah.
certainly is not. And it can be very raw and
yeah.
real.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel privileged to be able to
yeah.
do this, and that people allow me to do this, particularly with the NOTA.
Yes.
You know, that people are welcoming me into
right.
their this room where their loved one is dying is,
yeah.
it's
pretty staggering,
yeah.
but it really is
yeah.
incredibly humbling.
Mm-hmm.
Katie, you also have this Wind Phone. Lauren Ponder, I think you know, was on the show about a year ago and talked about Wind Phones, mm-hmm. but reintroduce the concept and what it
Certainly.
Is you're doing with it.
Certainly. So it is a Japanese concept. It was created by Ataru Sasaki. He's a master gardener in Japan. And in 2010, he lost his cousin. And he, you know, like us all, we silently struggle with our grief and are just clawing at a way to get through it. And he missed talking to him. So he took a little disconnected rotary phone, put it in his garden, and started having conversations with his cousin. And he called it a wind phone. In Japanese, it's kaze no denwa. So it's the expression that your words are carried with the wind, because you're not directly talking to that person, but they're carried with the wind. And so you have this wind phone. And the following year, there was a tsunami in Japan that killed thousands of people, hundreds, I'm not sure of the number,
mm-hmm.
Killed a lot of people. And he relocated his wind phone to a more public area so that the general public could come and use it. And since then, it has sort of, not, I'm going to say blown up, but it's gained traction, and there are wind phones all over the world. There's a wind phone map. I think there was a movie that had one in there. Somebody maybe wrote a book that had a wind phone in it. I had never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never heard of this concept. And I saw a video of a wind phone in Joshua Tree National Park in California. So it was a wooden desk with what I would call a desk phone, like mm-hmm. a desk rotary phone.
Mm-hmm.
It had sort of an enclosure of glass windows, wooden frame glass windows. It was beautiful, and it had a little notepad and stuff, and I thought, wow, a chair, that's amazing. What is this? So I looked it up, I figured that out, and I like I said, I'm always looking for ways to work through my grief, particularly projects or volunteer things, and I thought, I can do that. Which was not...
Famous last words?
Yeah, that was not exactly... It made it sound easy when I said it to myself. I was, I can do that. And I have a real love of telephones, even though I don't like talking on the phone. There's just something very... I just think they're endearing and lovely, and obviously they connect you to people. And I just started thinking about it. Like, is this something that I... Could I actually do this? I spend a lot of time at Jefferson Barracks Park. If you haven't been, you should visit. It is a beautiful park. Not many, I think it's slept on. I also don't want it to blow up, so just be gentle when you go. And I walked, I spend a ton of time there. And I thought, man, I know exactly a place where I would like to put this thing. How do I start this? So I sent in September of last year, I sent an email to the Parks and Rec Department thinking I wouldn't hear anything. I said, I got this little project. I don't know, whatever. I gave them some information. And about a week later, the manager of the park, Joe Montgomery, emailed me back. He was like, this sounds great. Let's meet up. I've got a place I think I'd like to put it. You know, let's get this ball rolling. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay. And so I met up with him and he wanted to meet at the place where he wanted to put it. And it turns out it's the same place that I wanted to put it.
Neat.
So we already had that sort of locked in. We had some, it was, you know, we're transitioning from fall to winter at that time. So seasonally and with the weather and stuff, I was in a time crunch because I was either going to have to do it now or wait until the spring of this year. And I knew I was going to lose my momentum. So I just, he gave me the red light, He gave me the green light. And I just started. I reached out to the Telephone Museum at Jefferson Barracks Park, which also everyone should visit. And Sharon from the museum was incredibly helpful in helping me find resources, creating a strategy for this thing, what would work outside, what wouldn't. They've been very shy about their participation in this. And so I want to make sure that they get shouted out a little bit. And by the week of Thanksgiving, it was installed.
Wow.
So it happened very, very quickly.
What is it? Whereabouts is it?
Sure.
And what does it look like?
Sure. So it is, I say it's behind the amphitheater. It's really between the amphitheater and the river, but there's not a real great way to access it outside of the amphitheater. I have to use the amphitheater as a thing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what was your question?
So kind of what does it look like? If someone walked by it, would they think, the phone's
they would think it was weird. There's a payphone there. So like the one in Joshua Tree National Park was wooden, you know, it had glass and, you know, the installation itself lends itself to the environment.
Sure.
So I couldn't put a wooden desk. I couldn't put anything like that, the breakable or anything. This is in a public park. There's, you know, a lot of stuff going on there. So originally I wanted it to be a phone booth, which the Telephone Museum talked me out of that, which I was grateful for. And ultimately I landed on what I would call just a standard payphone that you would see outside of a grocery store or on the corner of a block. It's got a black stand and a metal enclosure that says phone on top, and then the payphone would be in that enclosure. And instead of a payphone, I didn't want it to feel transactional or mechanical or cold.
Mm-hmm.
I had an old kitchen, what I would call a kitchen phone, that hangs vertically on the wall.
Yeah.
And like an old rotary phone that I had that I wanted to use. So yeah, so if you walk up upon it, you're going to think, that is a weird place for a payphone. And then as you get closer to it, you say, that's really weird. That's not a payphone at all. It's got this rotary phone in it. And then there's a plaque with I wrote a haiku as an homage to the creator. And I just wanted it to not stand out, but also to make people curious.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great. And sometimes it's easier than others to quote unquote connect with my mom, right? I find myself talking to her, and the next thing you know, I'm thinking about donuts or what, you know. Mm-hmm. It, to me, this is something that sort of focuses you in. It gives you a conduit. Mm-hmm. You know, in this moment, I'm going to do this thing.
Very intentional.
Then I'm
going
to walk away.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's great. I love it. Do you plan more?
I have been asked to do more. I'm not quite sure. I have another project that I'm working on right now to work on my grief, but I would love to do more. I really enjoyed it. I can't believe I was able to accomplish
it. You pulled it off.
Yeah, I can't. You know, it's just a thought. I have big ideas, you know,
yeah.
And for one of them to come to fruition is really amazing.
I'm quite familiar.
Yeah.
I'm quite familiar. Well, that's great. If you do decide to do another one and you need a partner, let me know.
Absolutely.
Because we have very generous people in the audience who could help you out in doing this. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
Very well done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
The nighttime comes around too soon. You can know what you mean to me. Back DGS.
Dave Hines says, this sounds like the perfect thing to place at the Lone Sailor Memorial overlooking the water on Long Beach by my house. Arlen King says, what a cool segment. Thank you. Appreciate that. I thought so, too. I think those things are neat. You want to hear a sobering statistic? Not really a statistic, but I was watching an anthropologist over the weekend. That sounded pretty snooty, didn't it? I was having tea with my economist friend, and the anthropologist said that we so underestimate the level of overstimulation that we have in this world. He made the point that you could go back 200,000 years and people are going to have the exact same brain we do. It hasn't really changed that much. And certainly you could go back 500 years. He said 500 years ago, we get more information and stimulation in one day than people 500 years ago would receive in weeks or even months. Yeah. All in one day. Just jammed into our brain.
I mean, I notice a difference from whenever I was in college and high school, you know. Just the technology is so different and the way we consume things. I mean, what do we all do the second we have a down moment here in the studio? We look at our phone.
Yeah.
And what are you doing? You're just taking in information. It's not always useful information, but it is information and it is energy that you are absorbing. And I watched something similar this weekend. Dave was talking about how we do get really overstimulated and that energy has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it turns in on ourselves as stress, as anxiety, because we don't have a healthy outlet. We're taking in so much and then it has nowhere to go. And then we end up with these negative emotions.
Yeah. I you know, you guys all know my thing. I tested positive for the genetic markers for Alzheimer's. So I'm worried about that. And anytime I have a brain fart or can't remember something, I freak out. But if you think about it, like in the before days, it was, I think, so much easier to remember something because it wasn't surrounded by a bunch of people on my phone screaming at me about beef tallow. You know, mm-hmm. It's like all that. I don't think your brain really goes, this is just some lady talking about putting beef tallow on your face. I think Dave's okay without that. They're like, we need a file for beef tallow. Like, let's get this thing set up. Mm-hmm. And your brain starts doing what your brain does. So. Can we forget about Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. Very gloomy day out there, man. Like Wheels has pointed out, it has not stopped raining since I got here this morning.
It's like a car wash.
And Dave Murray will be with us exactly 1 hour from now. If they were expecting anything severe, Michael Calhoun or Megan Lynch would be in here telling us about it. But I think there are some chances of something a little bit severe tonight and tomorrow. So Dave will keep us lined out on all of that. Our good friend Bernie Miklas joins us now. Hello, Bern.
Dave, good to be with you. Yeah, man. You know, my home office is on the third floor of this old Victorian house. And nice. I tell you what, there's some of the thunder booming, man. I jumped a little bit in my chair. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I said this on the show last week and people sort of made fun. I wish half the days were like this.
Oh, no.
I could take half the days being rainy and gloomy. I just find them so cozy.
Dave, I'm with you, believe it or not.
Nice.
Seriously, my man. I've always liked kind of an overcast day. I wouldn't want it 300 days a year, but you know, I don't complain when they come along. I find that I sleep better. I find that if I have time for a nap on the weekends, for example, I can get a nap in much easier than if it's sunny and bright outside. But then again, I mean, I'm not a jerk. I mean, I understand that people want to have, especially on weekends, they want to have fun time weather. I get all that, you know, but I'm a hermit, so what the heck?
Hey, Bert, I want to ask you more than just, hey, what did you think of the Tarps Off boys? Walk me through, because I had my own awakening watching Friday night and going like, why do they keep showing these boys with their shirts off? And then the next day I finally Googled it and I'm like, oh, okay. Like, how did you sort of like get to know what's going on and what did you think of it?
Yeah, well, I just, like everybody else, I was kind of keeping track of the game and noticed it. And I know Rooney and John Rooney and Ricky Hort were talking about it on the radio side, because I tend to listen to that while I'm watching the actual video feed. And I kept, thinking, this is really, really cool. And then I appreciated the fact that, Cards TV kept showing that crowd. And then what I thought was cool about it was that, it's one section of the dudes, the bros from Stephen F. Austin University. It's one section's filled. That's cool. Then all of a sudden, fans in the ballpark kept, they moved over to that area. So then the next thing, it's two sections are filled. Then it's three sections filled. Then it's four. Then it's like four and a half. And it just kept growing and growing and growing. And if you were watching it at home, or if you're at the ballpark, you just were looking at this, and saying, my gosh, what a great time people are having at the ballpark. I thought it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen at Busch Stadium, because it happened organically. It happened spontaneously. It wasn't pre-orchestrated. It wasn't like a planned theatrical thing. It was just like natural positive combustion, and it just really made it a very special environment, not only Friday night, but Saturday and Sunday as well.
Yeah, it's really hard to create those things, because it has to be the combination of those young individuals, those guys from Stephen F. Austin getting it started, other people buying in. But if the team's down 8-0, none of it works, right? It's mm-hmm. this really great confluence of a team playing well, fun young players, and then all of a sudden this sprouts up in the middle of what wound up being an amazing game. It's that timing and combination that makes it sticky.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But I do think I'm not disagreeing with you, my good friend. I'm just saying, I will say this, the fact that it was a tight game and the Cardinals came back and they won, that made it even better. But I tell you what, if that kind of thing's going on, and especially if you got the Stephen F. Austin bros in there, I don't know that they'll be in there anymore. They kind of were on the leaving train back to East Texas. Yeah. But if the Cardinals are getting whomped 6-0, I don't think that section would go quiet or start sitting down. I think they'd keep making noise. So that would even, kind of salvage it, otherwise salvage a bad night at the ballpark, whatever.
Felt like a college basketball game, didn't it?
I would say it actually felt like a college football game. It felt like a great European rivalry, like Manchester United versus Liverpool. It felt like a lot of great sporting events that are not associated with baseball or not similar to baseball. And that's what was so cool about it. It was a little bit like it had a little bit of a World Cup feel to it.
Mm-hmm. You have to tip your cap to Ollie for having the idea, or if it wasn't his idea, following through with it, to buy the tickets in the right field low section for those guys, and they filled it up the rest of the weekend, and then bringing the team into the Cardinals clubhouse. I'm not gonna lie to you, I was misting up, like watching the 5 o'clock news and seeing those guys and seeing Mason Wynn and Victor Scott II take their shirts off and join the guys. I thought it was great.
It was great. And the thing of it is, it was perfectly natural. Like, it wasn't phony. It wasn't fake. It wasn't like, okay, let's get this over with type thing. Thanks for coming. I mean, it was a merry, merry, merry scene. I mean, people were happy on both sides. Like, the Cardinals players loved it. Ollie mm-hmm. loved it. Coaches loved it. Those players from Stephen F. Austin loved it. And the Cardinals treated them like they were the most important people in the world at that moment. And I thought the sincerity and the genuine nature of it was exactly why you missed it up, because that you would not missed up if it had any hint whatsoever of being kind of a little bit of a forced, well, I guess we should do this, right, type of thing. No, they loved it. Both sides loved it. And man, that's sports at its best right there.
Yeah. We all know in this business, there are people whose job it is to go, hey, we need to capitalize on this. And if we get some tickets and we can blah, blah, blah. This just felt like ball player to ball player.
No, I totally agree, but I do think that's going to be interesting. I did a video on this today at STL Sports Central. Okay, what happens now, though? Because people are going to want more of this. I mean, this thing went viral, mm-hmm. not just in St. Louis. It went viral over the entire country. I was checking out of the social media platforms like I haven't done in a long time. and the stuff was pouring in on all the platforms. People doing videos on TikTok and everywhere else. People way outside of St. Louis had nothing to do with St. Louis itself in terms of where this stuff was coming from. They were just raving about what this is like one of the most unique things I've ever seen in a major league ballpark. This was like totally cool. This is a way more baseball teams ought to do this. Man, the Cardinals did a great job. What a great job by Ali. That was like the most fun thing I've ever seen in a long time at a ballpark. And just praise pouring in from all corners of the United States with people talking about how cool it was. And that made me feel good because the Cardinals have been down. The attendance has been down. St. Louis, the city, and I'm a resident, a proud resident, you know, constantly takes a beating, constantly takes all the cheap shots and everything else. I love seeing all the praise come pouring in. I loved it.
And meanwhile, we took another series.
Yeah, they haven't lost a series since getting swept by Seattle. You know, it seems like a long time ago. So the Cardinals have won four series, haven't lost any, and they have two splits over the last six. Got the eighth best record in baseball. I mean, I think everything's looking good. The pitching's really gotten better. And my only concern right now, offense having they're struggling in May. They're absolutely struggling in May. I'd like to see that get turned around.
Yeah, it's an interesting spot, Byrne, because you know when you're looking at where they can get better, there are guys. I mean, like, because we've seen it cycle already a little bit. Guys that weren't performing great earlier, a couple of the starting pitchers have been solid and more than solid. They've been excellent for the last two and a half, three weeks. There's a little bit of a cycling going, and there are guys on the offensive side who have slipped a bit, who I think have the ability to get it back. And the question is, do we get it all together or do we keep on? And this is not a negative. It's just right now, when one part slips, another part picks it up. What happens if they get going and it's kind of the whole team at once?
Well, and they haven't had that because the first, as you know, the first month of the pitching staffs getting beat up a bit. The offense was really, really good. Now there's a little bit of a change in roles.
Right.
You know, if you look at the Cardinals offense, if you look at their pitching staff, this isn't just a new thing. I've been harping about this, reminding everyone this goes back to April the 14th. This is like 30 games ago where the Cardinals have the fifth best starting pitching ERA in baseball, number five. And their overall pitching staff over that time is like number eight in ERA. I mean, I think there's a tendency to just look at this and say, this is kind of like, this is cool that this just started to happen. No, it actually started to happen a month ago. These guys are really, really, really good. They're doing a heck of a job. And it's even better in May, but the last couple of weeks of April were damn good as well. And that's a big, big deal. But now they got to get the offense in track. And, you know, it starts at the top because I love J.J. Weatherholt. Who doesn't love J.J. Weatherholt? And he is clearly the engine and the catalyst of this offense as far as getting things going. He's not having a good month. I mean, it's just a fact. It's not a diss. It's not a negative. I'm not ripping him. I mean, the numbers are the numbers. They're pretty bad this month. But he's a smart guy. He's got a lot of maturity and composure. He's also smart as could be. He'll figure it out. Yep. He'll get out of it. I don't think any of us expected him to go, you know, 6 months and all 6 months would be blazing, you know. I think it's inevitable there's a downturn here and there.
It wouldn't be a Bernie Miklas segment unless we went long. So I'm going to push Rachel one more time. If you can do this within a couple of minutes, Byrne, we should have talked about it more because I think it's interesting. Pete Crow Armstrong was being heckled, said some pretty terrible things to a female fan. Wheels did a little analysis of it. What's your take?
I mean, from what I've read, and I only read the Chicago coverage, I mean, listen, man, I've been going to Major League Baseball games since the 60s, you know, and there's going to be stuff that happens all the time in Major League Baseball where, you know, fans will heckle a player. I mean, this is hardly anything new. I mean, this is something that's pretty much a constant. I don't mean 20 times a game, but heckling is part of the game. Most players shake it off. Most players don't like it, but they shake it off. They don't escalate it. And, you know, Pete Crow Armstrong, as much as I admire his talent and the fact that he's a gung-ho dude and all that, I really admire that. But he's got a tendency to kind of, put on a show of his own, like throw tantrums, you know, like elevate these situations, make them worse. So I thought the dude should have showed some maturity there and just rolled with it, because you're getting heckled. What's the big deal? It happens. It's happened to the greatest players repeatedly in the history of the game. Mm-hmm. So why are you so thin-skinned?
All right. Great minds think alike. Same thing that Kev said. Tell us about Saliga Byrne.
Welcome back, DGS 251. So, Facebook rage to watch the yo-yo video?
Yeah, and Instagram.
So go watch. I love when things like this happen. I brought in some vintage yo-yos for the guys. I didn't bring one for Wheeler because he said yo-yoing was stupid. And
all I can do is grab the string and swing it around.
And so we shot a little impromptu video. Didn't, you know, schedule anything. Just like let it happen. Very funny. And Andrew, you're already talking a little smack about your yo-yoing.
Yeah, I mastered it after you guys left.
All right.
Oh, I wish we could have gotten that on the video.
Yeah. Kevin saw what I was doing. I looked pretty good, didn't I?
Yeah.
He wasn't watching.
I wasn't watching.
Were you walking the dog?
I landed it, which is where I had to touch the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was doing, I had that going on, so I invented a trick. Yeah, so I invented the trick where it goes down and touches the ground.
So you went from not being able to wind the string to inventing tricks.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I brought it down. It touches the ground. It stays there. I call that stick in the landing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I might work on that one.
Do you prefer the glow in the dark or the, what's it called?
The jet top trickster?
Jet top trickster.
I think is what it's called. The jet top trickster is sublime. Okay. It feels great. First of all, the colors
it's
on these things are incredible.
It's got a great yo-yo feel.
Almost certainly because it uses like lead paint, I'm sure. But the color, I kept looking at it. I'm like, man, these things really are very pretty.
Okay. I like it. I like the progress. It's nice.
And I mostly have figured out how to wind them reliably.
Okay.
Which seems like the last big hurdle before I become a master.
Have a little fast food news.
Ooh, let's hear it.
Pizza Hut is bringing back its old school restaurant features, including the red roof, red checker tablecloths, vinyl booths, Tiffany style lamps, salad bars, and red plastic cups.
Why did you get rid of them in the first place, Pizza Hut?
Started with a dude who bought 80 of them, and this is what he's done. And so Pizza Hut in general is like, that's a pretty good idea. So
has it been successful for this?
It has. It has. People are coming back. I love Pizza Hut. I love Pizza Hut. And I will get it delivered and be very happy. Thin crust, double cheese, hamburger. That is the Glover family pizza. But there's nothing more magical than sitting in a Pizza Hut, which I haven't done in 40 years, and having that salad bar.
Apparently, there is a retro Pizza Hut at the Lake of the Ozarks.
Mm, but then you have to go to the Lake of the Ozarks.
I've heard these similar rumors about a retro Pizza Hut. I used to go there all the time. I loved pizza. I shouldn't say I. It was my family would go there all the time. Mm-hmm. We would go to the one in Godfrey all the time, and we would sit down and eat, and it was so much fun. There was a little arcade game there that my brother and I would play. I don't know. Pizza Hut was definitely. I'm cynical about whether or not this would work, even though it apparently already has. But Pizza Hut was definitely like a special place.
Well, let's hope it happens closer
to
here.
It's just that there was a time when there weren't 9 million pizza places. You know what I mean? Like the universe was a little smaller in the pizza world.
Yeah.
I guess, but I feel like, I mean, we chose it in my family, and I mean, there was plenty of pizza places. There was Nemo's. You know, not far from there, there's, you know, always been like Papa John's and Little Caesars and stuff in the Alton area. I don't know.
I think it's a wonderful play, especially for like millennials and above, like the people who remember the old Pizza Hut and have fond memories.
And maybe
there.
For a Gen Z who seem obsessed with what we had. So maybe they'll embrace it too.